The next time you need auto parts and accessories, trust the parts professionals at the 24 Orlando O'Reilly Auto Parts stores. Our professional parts people know what it takes to get the job done right. Professionals have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for decades. Now you can too. Professional parts people. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stars Alive.
Big shout-outs to them. We're ready to go to war with you every weekend here on a Cowboy week. Well, so for some people it's the weekend, but the week beginning, rather, I guess would be better. On the Stars Align 90-Minute Monday, Cowboy 90-Minute Monday. Dustin, man, it's quite the day I had getting in here. We'll get into a lot of the big topics on our show. We got Dez again. We got Jera World, all sorts of cool stuff. QBR, for anybody who really cares what QBR means, we got QBR breakdown for you, as well as Dynasty compared to Good Team. So it's an action-packed show today, but I'll tell you, man, I might need you to vamp and talk for a little bit. I just had a grand opening at Sonic, okay? So I don't know if you guys got Sonic down there or if you had him in New Hampshire when you lived there, but a grand opening. We did not have a single one here. And we got there at 1 o'clock. By the time we ate, it was like 2. By the time I beat the traffic, and then obviously you know what happened. So luckily I made it. But
no, go ahead. Tell everybody what happened so they know why you're out of breath right now.
Well, I'm out of breath because I'm 260 pounds at 6 foot tall. But no, I was running because I was going into the station today to do this, this lovely podcast that we do. And I'm racing because I'm sitting there like I got to deal with I-87 traffic. I had to deal with all the Sonic people who are going and killing themselves by eating that food to begin with. And I'm rushing to get here. And all of a sudden, woo, 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 I see the lights behind me. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, so
never fail. They're always there.
No, it seems like it. I mean, nothing against the men and women of law enforcement. But wow, I was... If he took any longer than he did, I probably would be a fugitive on the run right now. I would have taken off. But regardless, big show today. We've got the first topic, which is a lot of people have sent us in emails to info@starsalignshow.com. They've sent us in a lot of stuff, and feel free to call us up as well to talk if you want. Again, that's 713-955-0359 to discuss this. Dallas Cowboys, are they building a dynasty now? Is this team coached by Jason Garrett and sort of run by Stephen Jones now? It seems like Jerry's taking a bit of a back seat. Are they building another early to mid-90s type of team? I want to say yes, because I'm looking at all the pieces that they're putting together, and they look an awful lot like those Super Bowl caliber teams.
Okay, so what I like about the question is the keyword building, okay? Because if you were to tell me, answer the question now, are they, you know, the next, you know, dynasty? I need you to win in order for that to be something that I can actually answer, right? Because you can't call somebody a dynasty before they at least win the first one. When the Seahawks won,
one's calling them a dynasty now.
Right. Right, right. That's why I'm just touching upon, are they building towards another dynasty? I'd say that I hope so, but, man, I would really say they are if they had retained Murray, because you would be looking at a 26-year-old running back who just had unbelievable stats the prior year, and now he's moving forward trying to repeat or better hurt his performance, but we don't have that. We let him go. And I guess the thing that I'm worried about the most about today's Dallas Cowboys is they seem to have fallen in love with the Moneyball scenario. You know, that was a great movie, and it was based on a real story in baseball. You know, can we win without spending, you know, the ridiculous amounts of money that the Yankees are willing to spend and all those big market teams? Well, I feel like Jerry and Steven are looking to the future a lot more than they are, you know, the now scenario, because the now is Tony Romo's got about 4 years left on him, and that's assuming everything goes well. You know, if he doesn't take another vicious hit to the back, if he stays healthy, if he keeps getting stronger and better and more accurate as he gets older, you know, will we only get better, you know, as a team? So I get the building for the future scenario, but I'll tell you one thing, Chris. If we're going to do the building for the future scenario, and I'm segueing into the next segment, you better make that man Dez Bryant happy, 88, because he is the face of the future. I don't care what anybody says. I've said this to a million people, that long after Tony Romo, Jason Witten, long after these guys, Dez Bryant he's going to be on every shirt. You know, throw up the X is going to be a Dallas Cowboys, you know, trademarked line that's going to be sold and pushed in the pro, you know, in the pro shop. So he is a necessity for the future. But again, are they building a dynasty now? I think they are, because they're trying to reinvent the wheel. They're trying to, you know, build that offensive line and make the league realize that it starts with the big boys down low. And then I think, you know, they'll address the defensive stuff. That Jones kid, I've heard nothing but amazing feedback from everybody.
Oh, he's been unbelievable.
About what he's been doing in the offseason. Everybody from Romo to the coaches to other defensive players, just like, this guy is a freak. So I'm loving that. But again, man, you know, it's really put up or shut up time. And I know it's unfair, because I don't feel like we should be heaping the pressure of, you need a Super Bowl win this year on a team that was 8-8 for three straight seasons and then just had a breakout 12-4 year. But this is, I guess, the pressure of being America's team is, all you got to do is show up once, and now it's like, all right, you're doing it. You're doing it. You better do it, because if you don't do it, you're a failure. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, when you have high expectations for a team like that, you know, you kind of almost have to put that kind of pressure on them, because if you give them any leeway and, you know, you're like, they'll do it next year, and then they come close, but they don't, they'll do it next year. You know, I think you got to put pressure on those kind of teams in order to be successful, when you've got the talent. And the reason why I agree with a lot of our callers is I'm looking at this roster that they're building, and I look at, okay, what separates a potential dynasty team from just a very good team? And I'm looking at, okay, well, quarterback, boom, they got that. Offensive line, boom, they got that. Running, that's still the big question mark. They've got defense. Now, on this defense, okay, you're looking at this mid-90s team that won 3 out of 5 years. Obviously, you know, they had a lot of big time. You know, they had Larry Brown back there at corner. Obviously, Deion Sanders was back a little bit, the flashy type players. Kevin Smith was okay at times. But, you know, you're looking at guys like, they had Leon Lett and Darren Woodson and, you know, all sorts of Tony Tolbert, Russell Maryland. I mean, guys that were, you know, big time defensive guys. And I look at this team and I say, you know what? This defense actually isn't as bad as, I mean, they've come a long way and they're young. And one of the things that I think is why this defense can sort of support us not having a running game a little bit is because of what was posted on DallasCowboys.com the other day about these corners and about these young teams and about how this defense just might get the job going. I mean, think about it this way. What if Brandon Carr picks up where he left off last year, playing much better in the later part of the season? What if he comes into the season like that? You've got Orlando Scandrick. You've got this Byron Jones kid who's a freak athlete. Tyler Patman is not a bad backup bench player. Corey Walker, who he came to the slot, Reborn is healthy. He actually does something. A nasty area that's deep as well. But then you're looking out, okay, well, Greg Hardy, who knows what happens with him. Sean Lee is one of the best linebackers in the game when he's healthy. Anthony Hitchens was, I think, Rookie of the Year on defense last year, at least one of them, Rolando McClain. I mean, we just picked up Jasper Brinkley, Andrew Gack, Keith Rivers. I mean, this team, DeMarcus Lawrence is coming along. Randy Gregory looks great. Jeremy Mincy. So this team on defense, the only question mark I see that sets this team from being a potential dynasty in the works throughout Romo's final 5 years, the only question mark right now to me is that running game. So I agree this running game, actually this running back by committee thing, actually ends up being something that, you know, something special like the coaching staff thinks it's going to be. They've got all the other pieces. I mean, it's a mathematical formula: quarterback, running game, offensive line, defense. I mean, dynasty teams have all those. We have three or four. Those are pretty good odds.
I agree with you. You know, it's one of those things where you threw about 50 what-ifs at me. And, you know, I'm all about optimism and, you know, if this happens and if this happens and, you know, what if that happens. Yeah, man, if you know, the worlds collide, you know, the sun lines up, everything's perfect, then yeah, we should go undefeated and win the Super Bowl. But the problem
and
is
the stars
that,
align.
You know,
woo, look what I did.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Nice plug. So
exactly.
It's just one of those, yeah, it's just one of those things where I'm worried about Romo's health, A. B, can Darren McFadden hold a starting job? And, you know, you've said many times that you think that, you know, it's going to be a running back by committee thing. And, you know, I'm not in favor of that because I think it's a lot harder for – okay, but I'm saying I'm not in favor of that because I'm about, you know, guys' mindsets, the psychology of the game. And if you're basically – you know, the coach comes up to you and says, all right, man, check this out. So you're our stretch guy. Whenever we run that stretch play, it's you, man. And you're going to give me 150%, and we're going to kill it. We're going to catch them off guard. All right. Then you walk up to the other guy. All right, you're my, you know, you're my down in the pit guy. You know, you're my in the up the middle ISO run straight. You know, just a straight runner. I just don't like it because then that becomes too vanilla because. When a team sees, I think back to, I believe it was like 2007, 2006. You remember when the Giants had Earth, Wind, Fire? They had the three running backs. They had Jacobs. They had, I forget who the other two are, honestly, and I don't want to take all day trying to figure it out. But they had a running back by committee thing, and their nicknames were Earth, Wind, and Fire because they felt like they had a different element to throw at you, you know, and you weren't going to be ready for it. But the problem with that was is that when Brandon Jacobs came into the game, you knew he wasn't going to beat you with speed, so you became one-dimensional because you're like, well, this is their power guy, so all right, let's load the box up because clearly they're not throwing an outside pitch to the guy. So that's why I don't like running back by the committee because even though DeMarco Murray, you dog on his speed, which clearly is faster than any one of us could ever become on our best day because he is fast, he's just not running a 4.3 40 like McFadden. He still had moments where he shook somebody and he used the speed and he surprised people because people were like, all right, he's going to lower his shoulder and he's going to come at me. No, he switched it up and people were shocked. You can't do that with a running back by committee scenario because you can pretty much, you know, label each guy. That's their power guy. That's their speed guy. That's their shifty guy. That's their screen pass guy. Are you telling me if Darren Sproles goes into the backfield, in the Philly game, you're not expecting a screen pass or a pitch?
I mean, I sort of am, and sorry if I disconnected there for a minute.
No, everything's fine. I heard you. We're good. I just want you to – yeah. I just wanted people to realize that the running back by committee thing, to me, is not the, you know, not the building block for the future. I think we need one guy, and it might have been, to your point, we might have had to draft the first-round running back and hand him the reins and build and let him grow, but – you know, other than that, I don't want to spend the whole show talking about running backs. Other than that, you know, are they building the next dynasty? I freaking hope so because obviously you and I were as diehard as it gets. But, you know, everybody's been excited about everything they've heard on the defensive end. The Gregory kid, he's, you know, added 15 pounds. He's becoming a big daddy down there. So I'm digging it. I just feel like we're probably – I don't know. What are we, you know, one step away from? Maybe we need, like, that Pro Bowl safety, you know, that the Polamalu, that field general guy that can just read the defense and be there at and challenge every ball that goes up. Maybe we're, you know, one big defensive tackle away. I don't know. I just feel like we're that one small piece away from being that favorite in the Super Bowl, and that's my honest opinion.
You know, it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible to be that sort of optimistic. I don't see why it's why you can't be that optimistic. But part of me wants to say this is a young team. Part of me wants to say that this team needs a lot of work. They need a lot of help. But also part of me wants to say, you know what? I don't see a better full, you know, top to bottom team when you look at all of the stars, all of the quality players, all the veteran players, as well as the young stars that are out. I mean, I feel like we had a running game. If we had a guy like, you know, like Murray back, or if we were able to bring in Ray Rice or even AP, it would make me feel a little better. But the one thing that's going to make me feel really warm and fuzzy inside is a little bit of what we talked about and teased in the beginning, and that is if we can get 88 to come back, Dez Bryant. And that sort of leads us into a little bit of what we've got coming up next on the play. Dez Bryant and his agent met with Cowboys front office for the first time in months the other day. I think it was sometime middle of last week. And they sort of are closer, but they're also kind of far away as well from where they want to be. The big thing I'm reading from ESPN's ESPN Dallas, Adam Kaplan, is it's the guaranteed money thing. The guaranteed money is what has these two set aside and driven apart right now. That, to me, is baffling because it's like, okay, I understand we can't give Dez guaranteed money this season with the CBA, with the, you know, reworking of the contract with Skandrick and with Carr and with Romo's thing and whatever. I understand that. But why not set up a deal that's backloaded? Why not give him guaranteed money later on in the contract and load it up in the next 5, 6, 7 seasons and give him, you know, a couple grand guaranteed now, but that's it. It's baffling to me. I don't understand why this can't get done. I know I said a couple weeks ago, I understand, I think Dez is being a diva, but I also don't understand why the Cowboys are this close. I mean, I'm making a little inch symbol with my hands, this close, and can't get it done over a little bit of guaranteed money. Just backload the damn thing.
Well, let me ask you this. Backloading, is that really the answer? Because to me, that sounds like just taking this problem, putting it on pause and dealing with it in 5 years, because backloaded contracts.
Okay, 5 years.
Yeah, I understand that, but I bet you in 5 years. Okay, so let's think about it. Let's think about the realistic situation here. If I had to bet my house, I would say in 5 years we wouldn't have a quarterback, and Mr. Jones would either be looking to overpay a guy in free agency for it to come in, like a proven veteran who's probably 10 years in the league, probably like a Colin Kaepernick or, you know, somebody who would be hitting the free agent wire, because we would probably be about 1 or 2 years removed from Romo and trying to plug a rookie in or a younger guy, and I'm assuming it's not going to work because I haven't heard anything overly great from our, you know, our Dustin Vaughns of the world and our, you know, our Whedons of the world. Yeah, everybody said Whedon's like the most improved guy in practice. I don't care. He doesn't do anything when he's on the field. And you can ask the Cleveland Browns that, and you can ask our season games from this past year that Romo didn't make to that, because Whedon really didn't produce that well in my mind. So I think in about 5 years we're going to be hurting for a quarterback, hurting for a tight end, because Witten will surely be gone. And I think – you know, it'll be one of those things where it's going to be like, all right, are we going to overpay for a free agent QB to come in here? Are we going to keep trying to draft quarterbacks and swinging and missing? Who knows? Hey, and I'll bring you back to this argument, which I'll have with you all day. Maybe Johnny Football's on the market in 5 years, and maybe Jerry's like, hey, let's finally go.
God.
So my thing is it,
you,
get
you,
it?
Look,
is
I
it
just
really...
ate Sonic, and you're the one giving me heartburn. Jesus.
So –
all right. Anyway.
Is it really that smart to backload a deal with Dez? I say no. I say you make it straight across the board, even. And you know, whatever you have to do now to get that done, you get it done, man. If push came to shove right now and you were told you got to either deal Brandon Carr or your relationship with Dez Bryant is surely going to go to crap, what do you do?
Well, you talked about realistic options, and I think when you look at the realistic option, the only realistic thing right now is the checkbook. And the CBA and the salary cap, which the Cowboys have been notoriously strapped in the salary cap, it seems like every single year, they don't have the funds available. I know it sounds weird, but they don't have the funds available to just throw stupid money.
Right,
they don't,
because
they
it's not Major League Baseball, because baseball,
exactly,
you can go as
but
big
that's
as
what
your
Dez
checkbook.
Wants.
Right,
that's what
but
Dez
this
wants.
Is my point,
Dez,
though. There's plenty of players on this team that are overpaid that don't need to be on the roster. We will be fine without Brandon Carr next year. I assure you that. I promise you, Chris, that if Brandon Carr is not on this roster, we will not miss him, okay? And he's making $9 million a year. No. Don't act like you'll miss him. You won't miss him because you've talked more crap about Brandon Carr than I ever have. So the fact
of
the matter
I'll
is,
miss him. I love
the
his
guy
hair.
That's
I
making
–
okay, yeah, that's great. He looks like an idiot. So my biggest thing is, for $9 million a year, I don't need you on my team because you just let up big plays and then you get put on posters because Beckham decides to just abuse you in the end zone. I don't like him. I don't think he does anything good.
Beckham does that to everybody, in all fairness.
False. Because you know what? Right now, I'll tell you right now, you put Beckham up against a 6-foot-tall athletic corner, put him up against our rookie, put him up against Browner. He's not doing that to them because they're going to throw him on the ground. Because Beckham, realistically, he might be an athletic freak.
What if I put him up against your buddy Richard Sherman?
I don't know, because I'm not as high up on as Sherman as other people would. So I can't really defend Sherman. No, because you know who the best corner in the league is? Peterson in Arizona. So don't tell me a guy. No, don't tell me a guy who only plays one side of the field and doesn't return kicks is better than the guy who does play the whole field and returns kicks. He's a complete player.
Like,
we're getting way off.
If you
want to
know,
all right, listen. Stay on track.
You stay on track. You're the one talking about corner.
Brandon Carr, because he's the corner, he's making too much money, and we can't pay Dez because we're paying this retard. This is my point. We're paying too much money to bad players.
Drop the R word. The R-bomb.
We are paying too much money to bad players, bad role players, and the future of this team is not getting the money he deserves. Dez Bryant is the Dallas Cowboys now. He's the Dallas Cowboys in the future, and he's probably going to retire a Cowboy as long as they don't dick him over with this contract problem.
We can only hope. We can only hope he retires.
Okay. Agree or disagree? I'm going to ask you a question. Agree or disagree? Would any team in the NFL take Brandon Carr, as long as they had the salary cap, for like a third-round pick?
Fourth. Okay, so the team has to give up a third-round pick and they get Brandon Carr?
Yes.
Is that what you're
saying? And his salary.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, they would
so this is what
that.
I'm saying, though. Brandon Carr is not starter material to me anymore and to the stat sheets anymore because he got burned like toast. Okay, so why are we paying him starting money? This is my point. I would rather overpay Scandrick, which we did, by the way, and let Scandrick be the number one, and then let this rookie come in. And, yeah, you can let the rookie come in, play number two, or you can keep Claiborne up there. I don't care. The fact is we have too many young guys that need their chance to shine that are getting paid little money that could be huge for us. And, no, what are we doing? We're clogging the arteries. Because we're overpaying Brandon Carr. I hate it. And it's screwing everything up with Dez Bryant right now.
These guys still have contracts. I mean, that's almost like when a guy has a guaranteed contract and gets released. You know, the team still owes him that money. So, I mean, these guys are going to be – if the Dallas Cowboys have to restructure the contracts of four or five different players after they just paid them, and then they have to – you know, worry about trying to make contracts better here and there, and they got to worry. They're not going to make the July 15th deadline. The thing is with this is they got to sit down with Dez. Like I say, Dez, listen, okay, you've been doing great lately. You've been recruiting guys in. You've been showing up at Texas Ranger games, Dallas Mavericks games. You've been doing stuff for charity. Your face has been in the public. That's great. That's what we want. But like I said last show, if I was Dez's agent, I'd say, put this in writing and you will see me on the field this season. And what that is I will play for the 12.8 million or something that it is this year, which is more, by the way, per year than any other receiver in the league. And I'll play for that this year, for 1 year. Okay. Next season, as soon as that offseason hits, whether we win the Super Bowl or not, you're going to restructure me and you're going to give me that long-term deal. And you know, I don't think Dez cares. He's young. He's in his prime. As long as he gets his money, that's fine. He's making 12.8 this season alone. So, you know, no deal that he's going to get is going to give him 12.8 per year. So I think Dez has to just calm down and say, look, I'll play if you can promise and guarantee that when the CBA goes up next year and we have more salary cap money next year, that I get my money. That's what I would do. Because that way it sort of takes away the option of this second-year franchise tag nonsense. And if that's the case, if I were Dez, I'd take that all day long. But again, Dez is a head case, so who really knows?
Trade Brandon Carr.
Pretty adamant about that, huh?
That's all I got for you. Trade Brandon Carr, you get a lot more money. This deal with Dez gets done in 5 minutes. But because we're overpaying an average cornerback, we are screwed right now.
So you want to put all your faith in guys like Corey White and guys like this Byron Jones, who looks good, but we don't know what the heck he's going to turn out to be. Guys like, you know, who else?
Throw
him in the pool.
Throw him in the pool. Sink or swim.
Tyler Patman.
Throw him in the pool.
Yeah, but I don't want to sink or swim when we only have 5 years left of Romo and we need a Super Bowl. I don't want to sink or swim. I want to get guys out there because here's the thing. I think the reason why, and I know this is way off topic, we're talking about Dez, but I know one of the reasons, or at least I think one of the reasons, that Brandon Carr looked as bad as he did for the beginning part of last season was our defense and our pass rush didn't come along until like week 12. So quarterbacks were dropping back. They had all the time in the world to throw the football. And, you know, he is an average corner. He's not, you know, Pro Bowl status by any means. He's not even really considered in the top 10, 15,
so,
20
Chris,
in the league.
Do me one thing. Google what the average corner makes. Find out what the average corner makes. And if you can figure that out and tell me that it's $9 million, I'll never bring this up again. But I assure you that the average corner does not make $9 million a year in the NFL.
I'm bad at math, but I'm going to try to multitask here and finish my point well.
Would the franchise tag be for a corner? Because then that takes into account the Shermans, the Revises, and it averages every corner together. I want you to find out what the average number two corner on every roster makes. And I assure you, it won't be $9 million a year.
I got it right here. The average number two corner. Okay, going off on tangents here, but that's beautiful. Well, let's put it this way. Are you good at math?
It's all
relative. Good at math.
It's all relative.
All right. Well, here's what we've got. 2015 quarterback average as well as rankings. Okay, so it gives them what they're making per year plus what the ranking is. Obviously, they have Darrell Revis, number one. He's slated to make 14 this season. Patrick Peterson, number two, also slated to make 14 this season. Richard Sherman, 14 mil even. Joe Hayden, 13.5, Byron Maxwell, 10.5, Jimmy Smith, 10.2, and then Brandon Carr with just over $10 million after you include signing bonuses and things like that. So they have Brandon Carr in the top seven in terms of rankings. They also have him in the top
produce,
seven in terms of salary.
Does he produce top seven numbers?
No, but you know my point that I was making was that I think that he might if he doesn't have to do – Hold on. I think if he doesn't have to do everything, the fact is, if we
Chris,
get a pass
you,
rush,
I could put a jersey on you and tell you if you got a Pro Bowl defensive line going at the quarterback, all you got to do is cover a guy for 2 seconds, you'd be in the Pro Bowl. It doesn't matter. If you have a Pro Bowl pass rush, anybody's going to look good out there on corner. That's not the point that we're making here. The point is, he does not produce at that number one, nine, $10 million with signing bonuses number. He just doesn't do it. Listen, enough of Brandon Carr.
Well,
the one thing that I want to tell you real quick, Bleacher Report said the Cowboys are expecting Dez Bryant to accept any offer because of his bad financial current issues, meaning he's in such a bad way financially that the Cowboys' game plan is, we're going to throw you a number, and we know you'll accept it because you're so broke, you're not going to be able to survive. You won't be able to hold out. And that, to me, is the biggest sign of the Dallas Cowboys going in the wrong direction when it comes to negotiations, taking care of their players, and making you feel warm and fuzzy about being a Dallas Cowboy. Because that right there is a bloodhound, dirtbag move. And that's a legitimate quote from an article from a legitimate source. The Dallas Cowboys are lowballing Dez on purpose because they know he needs money and he'll take anything. And that
since
is ridiculous.
Day one. Since day one, they've sort of, you know, given Dez the business a little bit.
Right,
because,
but it was speculation, I mean, at least. They're literally on record now by saying this. At least we're just speculating
Dez,
it. But now they literally
have
said
it. Well, they have Dez by the balls here. He needs, obviously, if this is true, he needs the money. Okay, obviously, if that source is correct, then you know, he has too many people at his house, and he's partying too much, and he's going down the route of Vince Young, and will have no money left. That's fine. That's his own. He's a grown man. He can do what he wants with his money. But if that's true, then they've got that to hang on. They have the trouble that he's been in. I know that it got sort of forgotten about, but the Walmart video thing, they say, hey, well, listen, your name was negatively in the news, blah, 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 blah. They've had the fact that he's had security since he's
Did
came
you
into
watch
the league.
That video? Do you know
him.
What was on it?
All I'm saying is it's negative press. These are all negotiation things that they can say, listen, man, you haven't exactly been an angel, and we're looking for the next, you know, we're looking for the next superstar who we want to be this, and you know, we think because of your negative press issues, you're worth this. And they have Dez by the balls right now because, one, if he needs that money, then obviously he needs the money. But two, they got him in the franchise tag. So if he does sit out week one, okay, he sits out week one. But if he sits out longer than that, I mean, he's a franchise tag. He has to play. So he's going to get additional fines racked up on top of that. I think the first one is at least six figures for each one. And he's just going to get money, until eventually he's going to be living on the streets if he doesn't play. So they have him where they want him right now, to the point where if they can squeeze enough out of him that he's like, you know what, fine, let's just do it. And that's smart business. I mean, what do you think? I mean, get your best asset for the least amount of money. How is this ridiculous to anybody? I mean, yeah, I don't care what they pay the guy.
Let me throw a scenario at you real quick.
I don't care if they pay him $10 a year, if they pay him $100 million a year, as long as he's out there catching touchdowns, I don't care. Just get him in a uniform, whatever you got to do, sleazy or not, get him on the field.
So you and I are also big fans of the National Basketball Association. The Dallas Mavericks, who are owned by Mark Cuban, are very well known for treating their players like gold. They have the reputation around the NBA where if you go and play for the Dallas Mavericks, you're going to have an iPad in your locker. You're going to have padded seats. You're only going to fly the best airlines, the best jets. We're only going to get you
the best medical attention.
Listen. You're only going to get the best medical attention. That wasn't a free agent. That was a trade. And that was
just bad chemistry.
Why can't they
get anybody to come there?
I could debate
anyway,
you. Well, they are, though, because Jerry and Dez were spotted together. And they're guess what? Guess who they're recruiting? LaMarcus Aldridge and DeAndre Jordan. And they literally
LaMarcus Aldridge is going to go to the Spurs.
All right. Well, now we're getting way too far off topic. But listen, I'm just telling you, man. My point is why can't we be the team that everybody wants to play for? Because they treat their guys well. They pay them what they're worth. They treat them well. They get the best medical attention. They get the best perks, everything. You can't tell me we don't have the
freaking
money.
Because we used to do that. We won 8-8 for five straight years.
We used to win championships, Chris. There you
well,
go.
Who knows? I mean, neither one of us were old enough to know what business is or really what football was back when they were a winning team. All we've known has been 5-11s and 8-8s. What were they, like five straight years of 5-11 and then what, four of 8-8 or something like that? So all we've known is mediocre football. And
so
now,
all we've known is that the second that Jerry decides he wants to be, you know, let's cut it back on salaries and let's hold off and let's be, you know, sticklers with the guys and let's, you know, let's not give them what they're worth. It seems like there hasn't been anything positive that's come out of that, Chris. There hasn't been one hint of anything positive at all. You've got Romo. Do you even know what happens when Romo constantly restructures his deal? Do you know the science behind it and what's going to happen in the future?
I'm not a math person. No, I don't.
It's got nothing to do with math. It's the actual details of what happens. Yeah, what happens in the deal. Because what happens is if you just look into it and you read the headline, Romo restructures deal allows Cowboys additional cap flexibility for the immediate, then you're like, okay, cool. But if you actually go into it and you're like, well, why does it and what's going to happen in the future, it's basically like putting off money and putting off money and putting off money and putting off money. And then once he decides to stop, they're going to owe him for a long period of time. So it's basically like interest. And all they're doing when they do that is allowing themselves immediate cap flexibility, but they're just destroying themselves the following year and the year after that and the year after that. So this whole restructure stuff, people got to realize it's a bad freaking idea. You got to stop saying, we'll just get Romo to restructure and we'll just get doing this. What Romo's doing and what Tom Brady was doing in New England are two completely different things. Tom Brady was literally taking money off the table and was not signing a $55 million guaranteed deal. He was signing a $40 million guaranteed deal and then getting somehow that money in some other way. I'm not going to bring that up because that's going to get all kinds of people after us. But my point is Tom Brady was just not – he wasn't restructuring the way Romo is. These are two completely different ball games, okay? And that's why New England consistently has about $15 million available for them every year because they are not paying their players nearly as much as all the other teams around the league. So Dallas, I'll tell you what, when was the last time New England had a $9 million, well, $10 million with the signing bonus corner who underproduced on their team? They don't.
Revis.
They either pay a guy who's a superstar
Revis.
To come in. Who?
Revis. He underproduced on that team. Revis was not Revis. There was no Revis Island
in
Boston.
First year he shows up, Super Bowl win. Man, that's underproducing. Get the hell out
of
here.
But he didn't do anything. It wasn't him.
Oh.
I mean,
oh, my God.
It wasn't him. He wasn't the difference maker. But regardless, call us up, 713-955-0359. Hit us up on the Facebook. The chat block is open. Hit us up. Send us an email if Dustin said something to piss you off because, you know, usually I'm the logical one here. And hit us up. Revis, he didn't do anything. Malcolm Butler caught the winning touchdown. Revis was basically a ghost in New England. But regardless, that's for Wednesday's show. That's for the Around the League show, Wednesdays with Wade. Again, hit us up every weekend, every week. I keep wanting to say weekend. Man, I'm still in party mode. Every Wednesday at 4 o'clock, Wednesdays with Wade. Again, 713-955-0359 for today. Speaking of quarterbacks, though, and producing, you mentioned Romo and the restructuring of the deal and this and that and that. Romo also had something, which was a nice little blurb here that you sent me over this gem at some point during the week, and it was that Tony Romo led the league, and he led the league by a landslide in QBR. I think if you talk to anybody in the bar, you know, let's say you're having like a bar debate with somebody, which is I do a lot, and they start spewing off the mouth, oh, well, Aaron Rodgers is this, and Drew Brees is that, and Eli Manning has two rings, and it starts spurring off everything. One thing that they leave out is QBR. Nobody seems to care about QBR, but it's a very important stat. So, I mean, for anybody out there who's listening who knows what it is and says, oh, I know what that is, why are you talking about that? Fine. But for anybody who doesn't know what it is, why don't you tell us why QBR is so darn important?
So they introduced it in 2011, if what I'm reading is correct. Basically,
yeah.
What it does, it's just the ultimate accountability tracker for that position. So what it does is it literally, well, it's labeled as a proprietary statistic created by ESPN in 2011 that accounts for everything and every factor of the game. So what happens is if the QB throws an incomplete, that's counted for. if a QB is backed up first and 20 at their only 20 at their own 20 yard line, throws for a first down, that's equated. So it's this ridiculous equation that literally is going to account for your entire body of work, whether it's a play call, whether it's an incomplete pass, whether it's a first down conversion, whether it's a third and one conversion, fourth and 25, like the nasty throw to Terrence Williams against the Seahawks. That's what it is. So a lot of people get this confused with the passer rating. The passer rating and the QBR, two completely different things. The QBR is literally the all-time statistic for a quarterback. If you want to know what effect your quarterback has on an NFL game, you check the QBR out. If you don't know what the QBR is, you Google it like I did. And it'll literally – yeah, it'll literally define the whole thing out for you. It says it accounts for running out the clock, the probability of winning, completing a pass versus, you know, the downs and the difficulty, yada, yada, yada. So 113.2 was the league leader last year, Tony Romo. Now, by
right
a landslide,
behind Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, by a landslide, it wasn't that because Rodgers was right behind him at 112.2. So
yeah,
there's
I didn't
only
realize
a point.
That. I thought he only had 100. I thought he only had 100.
Right.
It was my mistake
on
that.
And then, so it goes Romo, 113.2, Rodgers, 112.2, and Roethlisberger, 103.3. So there's a very big gap between first, second, and third. So second
and
third.
So it's
a
landslide between Romo and Roethlisberger then. But,
oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a landslide from Rodgers to Roethlisberger. And then the Super Bowl reigning, the reigning Super Bowl you know, champion, Tom Brady's down there in the 90s. So,
97.4.
Right. So now this
sounds like
is
a radio
issue, right?
Tom Brady, 97.4 FM.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Okay.
So the thing that I think is funny is that the picture that I sent to you is it's a picture of people who have Apple phones, the iPhone, and you ask Siri. You press and hold the home button. You say, "Who is the best quarterback in the NFL?" And then the answer popped up. Last year, Tony Romo threw a QBR of 113.2. I literally did it because I'm like, I've seen a lot of these pictures that, you know, they're doctored and it's just a joke and it's funny. I literally did it because I have an iPhone. I pressed and held it. I said, you know, Siri, who's the best quarterback in the NFL? And sure as crap, that picture pops up and it's exactly accurate. So this is not BS. This is legitimate. The QBR, it takes into account your literally your entire body of work. And Tony Romo was the guy last year. So people hate hearing this. I don't know why. I don't know if people, they literally have the bobbled snap cemented in their head that they just can't get past it. I don't know if people have the rollout past the Revis for the pick six at the end of the Jets-Cowboys game a few years ago.
I was there live. That was painful.
Right. And I don't know.
I was in the stadium for that. It was horrible.
If it's those breakdowns that are causing people to just not realize that he has done nothing but improve every year, I don't know. People just can't shake the fact that they think Romo is average and he's dog crap, and I just don't get it because I got a statistic in front of me that literally says he was the guy last year. So
he's the
blown
one they
away
love to
that I guess
they,
so.
They'd love to hate him. I mean, he's the guy who is the scapegoat. I mean, he's the guy who
has
the
mistakes. Has he done anything to deserve the hatred? There are bad guys out there like the TOs that bark at the crowd, "I love me some me," and they actually earn that title. Romo's been nothing but perfect in the press. He's great for kids. He's a good idol, you know, idol to look up to. He's textbook. He's perfect. He's the perfect all-American quarterback that you could ask for. He's done nothing to deserve the love to hate.
Look who's giving out a lot of the hate. It's NFC East rival team fans, and it's fans who don't have a quarterback as good as he is. So
can I say one thing,
need,
Chris? When I meet another Cowboys fan, the first thing I say is, you like Romo or no? And half the time I get no. So even our own people don't like Tony Romo. Yeah, oh yeah, every time I meet, because I love it, because I obviously, you know me, I'm down in Florida, and even when I was back up in New England, anytime I met anybody with a Cowboy shirt on, I'm like, hey, all right, cool, man. You know, it's nice to meet another Cowboy lover. You know, what do you think about this year? What do you think about this coming year? All right, finally, what do you think about Tony Romo? And I literally have not met anybody who's been like, oh, I love him. Everybody's always said, he just doesn't seem to win the big game.
Wow.
These are his own guys. I've never met anybody besides you that has given him any kind of props as a Cowboys
fan. Well, here's the thing. I have. I'm in the land of the Giants, you know, and upstate New York here, up near Albany. Giants and Jets are the big ones. The Jets don't really matter, but the Giants are everywhere. And you know, I do have contact. I'm not going to drop anybody's name on the air because I don't have permission to do that, but I have a lot of Cowboy friends up here who will defend Romo to the death and will be like, listen, you know, this is why Romo is what he is. And you know, Romo has this, and this stat, and he does this, and this. And they are actually more knowledgeable about Romo than they are about the rest of the team. And there's about four or five guys that I know that we get together on Sundays and we go out to the sports bar and watch the game, and they are huge on Romo. I'm big on Romo. The thing I think, what I was saying before, though, is the only people who give you those kind of examples, being the fumble snap and the London Fletcher throw and the Del Rivas pick and the, you know, the multiple boneheaded plays that he's made, a lot of people will come out and do that. One, because they're an NFC East division rival team fan, and they also don't have a quarterback like we do. You know, you're not seeing Indianapolis Colts fans hating the Dallas Cowboys. One, because we only play them once every 4 years. Do they have Andrew Luck? You know, but if you talk to, you know, a team in Buffalo, oh, the Dallas Cowboys, oh, you know, it almost sucks. Okay, well, first of all, we only play you once every half decade, almost. And Fitzpatrick, or I don't even know, E.J. Manuel is your quarterback. So they just look for reasons, and they bring up things that are 7, 8, 9 years old now. I mean, the fumble, oh, well, he fumbled that snap. Okay, I was in high school. You know, or that whole, oh, well, you know, you saw that Revis pick, and Tony's always throwing interceptions. Okay, well, we didn't have an offensive line the way that we have now. He was running for his life, trying to do what good quarterbacks do and make plays. And, you know, we didn't have a Dez for most of his career. I mean, we had T.O., but that, you know, he's always had decent receivers, but he's always been running for his life. He's always been, you know, swim moving out of tackles and spinning off guys and throwing on the run recklessly. When he had an offensive line to sit back and drop back in the pocket and just basically pick teams apart like he's throwing at a dartboard, then he's obviously a very, very good quarterback. I mean, he's got the arm to throw a 70-yard bomb. He's got the arm to zip in a tight one in the slot accurately. You know, he's got all of those tools and those potentials. The problem is he's never had the team around him, and this is what I argue with people when I argue about Tony Romo in favor of Tony Romo. I say he hasn't had this kind of team around him his entire career. He's never had a defense worth anything. Okay, so he's always had to score 40 points a game to win games, constantly. And that's tough to do on a weekly basis in this league. He's never had an offensive line, so he's always been beat up and battled. And the only reason his back's the way it is, because Tyrone Smith's the only really solid guy he's had for most of his career. And then you look at, okay, well, why does Romo make some of the decisions that he makes? Well, okay, he also didn't have a running game for the most part. I mean, he had Marion Barber and Felix Jones and Julius Jones, but those are, you know, whatever guys. You know, I mean, look where they are now, you know. So he hasn't had these tools. Romo has basically been a one-man team. When he had T.O., yeah, he had a security blanket, but T.O. was doubled. So he had to hit Miles Austin. He had to hit, you know, not Terrence Williams, but who's the other guy? Lauren Robinson they had there for a while. He had to find other ways. Jason Witten has been really – it's been Romo and Witten. They've been a two-man team since he's been a starter, and you can't win with a two-man team. Now they've got pieces. Now they've got the big hog mollies up front that are, like you said, the Legion of Room, giving him all the space in the world to throw the ball. Now they've got, a running game. Now they've got a defense that's up and coming with one of arguably the best defensive coordinator in the league in Marinelli. So I think Romo now is sort of coming into his own. I mean, it's tough to call a 34-year-old guy in his prime, but I think Romo's coming into his own, and I think we're going to see the best football we've seen out of Tony Romo since he became the starter in the next 5 years, despite his age. Because the worst enemy to an aging quarterback is a terrible offensive line. And we've got arguably the best offensive line. So, you know, it really comes down to I need to see it to believe it, but I will defend Romo to the death. And I'm one of those guys where if you came up to me in the bar and you asked me, well, what do you think about Tony Romo? How do you feel about him? Well, I was a guy 2 years ago who would tell you, look, love him, a lot of talent. You know, I think he can win us ball games, but if he keeps this up, I'm giving him another year, and then I'm off the bandwagon, okay? And I would say that every year because I would just be so disappointed in what he would produce. And then I said that this past season, right before this season came out, I was like, look, I'm giving Romo this year. He's got the tools. He's got the receivers. He's got an offensive mind. If he doesn't do it this year, he's not doing it. And what do you know? He's got the 113 QBR and almost took us to a Super Bowl. So I have all the faith in the world in him now. I just hope that he doesn't let me down. There's no reason to let me down. I mean, he's got the offensive line. He shouldn't really be touched. Although, I don't know, in that Redskins game, it got kind of ugly. But, you know, he shouldn't really be touched. He's got, hopefully, number 88 out there. He's got Terrence Williams who's proven himself, Cole Beasley. I have a feeling, I have very optimistic thoughts about Romo this season.
So, ultimately, Romo has your seal of approval, I understand, but how about back to the QBR? What do you think of that stat? Do you like it? Do you hate it?
I like it because too many people fall back on singular stats. They fall back on how many touchdowns did he throw, or what was his yardage, or what was his passer rating, or whatever, and they look at one stat and they judge a guy, and they either throw him to the wolves or they bathe him in gold based on one singular stat. This singular stat is encompassing all the others. So all of those stats that you want to look at are all incorporated into this one. So for Tony Romo to be the best quarterback at QBR means that he was the best quarterback production-wise in the league last year. Did they win the Super Bowl? No, but that wasn't necessarily his fault. I mean, Dez caught the ball. Hashtag Dez caught the ball. But he's there. I don't think there's any way, if you have a pink brain in your head, that you can say that Tony Romo's not a good quarterback. He's not your favorite. I understand. He's not your favorite. You're a Steeler fan. You're a Packer fan. You're a Seahawk fan. Whatever. He's not your favorite quarterback. But there's no way that you could say you know anything about football and look at Tony Romo's body of work throughout the past couple of seasons, especially this past season, and say he's not a pretty darn good quarterback. There's no way you can say it.
I agree, but ultimately that statistic, I feel like, is the best way to account for everything. Like I said, top to bottom, this thing is including first downs. It's including, third and longs. It's including incompletes. Like, this is a lot more than the passer rating.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And everyone wants to fall back on a one singular stat. And they want to say, how many touchdowns did he throw? How many this or that? Or they want to look at passer ratings. Now, this stat is pretty much going to make passer ratings obsolete, I think, because this encompasses passer rating. This, everything passer rating is, this is that plus more. So it's kind of like, okay, QBR is becoming, it's still a dark horse. A lot of people don't really look at it when they look at quarterbacks. They go, yes, QBR was high, but that's, he got lucky on a couple throws. He's not that good. But, hey, numbers don't lie, numbers don't lie. And if his QBR is leading the league again this season, there's no way you can't at least consider him to be, I'd say, top five at least. Within the past decade. But again, that's just maybe that's the
I'm
super
saying,
fan coming out.
I'm saying,
know.
listen, non-super fan, I'm pissed off he didn't even get that much consideration for MVP this year because what he did was awesome. And DeMarco Murray even, a lot of people said that DeMarco and Romo would cancel each other out of the MVP vote because they kind of both like worked off of each other. But listen, I mean, Romo, there were a lot of game-winning drives that he put together
the league.
And you made
Leads
we all felt comfortable
with quarterback.
Yeah, and I felt comfortable. If the ball was in his hand at the end of the game, I was digging it.
And, you know, that's why even when we go back to the Green Bay, you know, game, the catch that wasn't a catch, I disagree with the play call? Hell yes, I disagree with the play call, because 4th and 2, and we're supposed to have the best running back in the league, and he hucks up a 20-yard Hail Mary to, you know, one of the best wide receivers in the league. I guess it's, you know, he was quoted by saying it was the first time they gave him one-on-one coverage. I got to go with that look. But, I mean, come on, 4th and 2. I would think you'd run the ball, but maybe that was the point. You know, they knew they were going to run the ball, so they caught him off guard. But, I mean, if you revisit that play, the corner wasn't off guard at all. The corner knew what was happening. Dez just abused him and made him look like a little kid. But I think Tony Romo is easily – Yeah, I think, yeah, but he is a quality. You know who Sam Shields is? He is the same level as Brandon Carr, and I bet you Sam Shields isn't making $10 million a year.
I'm going to look it up real quick.
Yeah, look it up for me, and I'll keep talking about why I think Tony Romo is an MVP candidate, because he led the league with the QBR, and because he's playing the most important position in the league, and he is doing it. You know, he looks comfortable out there. It's not like he's getting the crap kicked out of him. It's not like he's throwing multiple interception games. He's throwing multiple touchdown games, you know, high 200s, 300s. I think he'd be throwing for fours if we weren't running the ball as much as we were. You know, Lord knows we've seen him light the stat sheet up. That Thanksgiving Day game he had a few years back, I think he broke a record for the most touchdown passes in a Thanksgiving game or something like that. But yeah, man, I just feel like Tony Romo, he gets a raw deal. He puts up great numbers, and people just don't forget the negatives. And maybe it's that, you know, what everybody says, you're on America's team, so you're going to be scrutinized a little bit more than everybody else. You know, you're in the most important position on one of the most, profitable teams in the NFL. So I guess that's why he gets the raw end of the deal. Right.
All right. Sam Shields, in 2014, signed a 4-year, $39 million contract. It's worth $39 million over 4 years. Albert Breer reports he receives $12.5 million signing bonus and will collect $21 million over the first 2 years of the contract. So
what does that end up being? Like 11 a year?
Close. Yeah. Around there.
See, and so, you thought Shields wasn't that big of a, you know, a deal. I know he's getting paid like it.
Well, was Shields also the guy during the whole replacement ref debacle that clearly intercepted the ball against Golden Tate in Seattle, but they gave it to Tate? Remember that whole thing? Wasn't that Sam Shields too?
That's another Google thing. I don't know, but I do remember that whole scenario.
I'm pretty sure it was, but regardless, that was another debauchery of the league. But for anybody out there, though, please pay attention to QBR. I mean, this is why.
Today, they ride in the same limo. Different salary structure. Romo, spin, throw, end zone, caught! Terrence Williams, touchdown, Cowboys! Tony Romo!
Now, you heard Tony Romo throw that touchdown to Terrence Williams. If you were like me, you saw him throw it to Terrence Williams. Against the Houston Texans in a game that went to overtime in Dallas. Dan Bailey missed a kick in regulation and then won it in overtime for them. But you heard the fans in the background. It was that shrieking kind of, oh, I got to take my headphones off for this one, because it was loud in there. Okay, why was that? They were in AT&T Stadium, that $1.2 billion palace that they play in. Dallas has been tagged as the road warriors the past couple of years. They have been tagged as one of the best road teams, but at home, they were 4-4 last year. 8-0 on the road, 4-4 at home, in a stadium that is that big, that holds that many fans, that has a 90% rate of home team fanship, meaning there's not a lot of other fans that get tickets to those games. 90% of that stadium is Cowboys fans every week. They've got the nicest stuff, the most high-tech stuff, the 60-yard big screen board thing that everyone is in awe about when they come in. Why can't they win at home? I mean, why? The only games that they really won at home that were significant last season were the Indianapolis game, where they won 42-7. One of the Giants games that was good for their division. But other than that, though, those were two of the four wins. I don't even remember. Oh, and the Saints that they won on Sunday night. But other than that, though, I mean, all their signature wins, maybe it's because of the way that the scheduling was, but all their signature wins came on the road. And a lot of their bad losses, per se, came at home. That you know, when they got trounced at home by Philly on Thanksgiving, that was terrible. I lost to the Redskins when Romo went down and Brandon Weeden had to come in. The Arizona Cardinals came in, which were a beatable team without Carson Palmer and Brandon. Of course, we had Brandon Weeden. If we had Romo, we would have won that game. But regardless, we had an average Cardinal team beat us. Bad Redskins team beat us. Team beat us at home. I don't understand it. Maybe you can shed light on this. I don't get it though.
Yeah, it's tough. I read that. I mean, I haven't been there, but I read that when you walk in, one of the first things you see is a Victoria's Secret's pink store. So they are attempting to appeal to the masses, right? They want Joe. You know, Joe Cool, you know, American dad, Cowboys guy to come in with his wife and his kid, and his wife to be like, oh, see, you know, sweet, Victoria's Secret's all kinds of Cowboys stuff all over it. Nice, let me go in here real quick and buy some stuff. And then, you know, you walk 20 feet more and you see the pro shop. Now dad gets to go in, you know, buy a jersey, you know, buy a Romo jersey, a Witten jersey, whatever. And, or maybe the new rookie Jones. Right. And then, you know, maybe they got the kids shop next. I just don't understand how home field isn't home field. You know, there was a game last year, and I remember, I think it was the Texans game. Romo, after the game, he's like, I need to talk to Jerry because having to go to a silent count at home is unacceptable. There were more Texans fans. There were more Texans fans in the stadium than Dallas Cowboys fans. Now, if you want to, you know, oh, well, it's Texas, you know, and it's not that big of a drive for the, you know, the Houston people to make
it
to
2 hours.
Arlington. And that's another beef I got. Why the hell are we called the Dallas Cowboys when we're based out of Arlington? But anyways, so, you know, the travel between.
Why are the Giants playing in Jersey and they're called New York?
I agree. I agree. If you're literally from somewhere, that should be your name, not, you know, whatever. But anyways. So my whole thing is that's unacceptable to me. Okay, when would you ever see a place like Foxborough filled with, you know, Jets fans? When would you ever see – this was the Battle of Texas. That was a big game within the season. The Houston Texans, and not only was it big because Wade Phillips was your defensive coordinator who got fired and used to be your head coach, but it was
good
big
old
because,
Wade.
Yeah, it was big because this is Texas. You're telling me this is our spot. We're the team, and they're trying to act like we got J.J. Watt. You know, we got Arian, blah, 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 the running back. I'm blanking. Arian Foster. We got Arian Foster.
Yeah.
We got Texas
Ben
Watt.
Tate.
Yeah, this is our spot. This is our spot. We're the Texas team, not you guys. Dallas Cowboys are done and over with. They're dead. And that was a big game. Ultimately, we won it. And I just thought it was ridiculous that Romo literally had to be like, this is, you know, we got to monitor who's buying these tickets. But this is the point. Jerry just wants money. He wants that checking account to go through the roof, and he'll do anything he can to get it to happen. Do I think he'd sell his soul for the most money available and say, I don't care if the Cowboys ever win again as long as I'm a billionaire and I'm comfortable beyond my
He loves
my
this
kids
team.
And my grandkids.
No,
right. I know that he loves the team, so I know there's a fine line, but, man, he really needs to toe it a little bit better because when you got your starting quarterback being like, hey, what the hell? I can't even relay the play call to our own team, the home team, because – the freaking visitor fans are too damn loud. This is reminding me a lot of my my favorite NBA team, the Brooklyn Nets, and that's painful because they
Sorry
suck.
To hear that.
Yeah, and they suck. But man, whenever you go to Brooklyn Stadium and they have a home game, there's more away fans. And even the fans that show up wearing Brooklyn shirts, if LeBron James is in the house and he dunks, everybody's cheering. Brooklyn or Cleveland, Ooh. It doesn't matter. And I hate that. I grew up in a day and age where if the visiting team showed up, you said you suck and you made them feel depressed about their life until they wanted to get the hell out of the stadium. And now it's just
You're
like, oh, well,
Yeah, now it's just like, oh, well,
everybody's,
you know, everybody wins, and that was a nice layup, so we're all going to clap. Like, get the hell out of here, dude.
Well, let me tell you a story. Joe, keep going. Let me tell you a story when you're done.
No, you go. I want to hear it.
Oh. No, I was saying, we're planning on, and again, I'm going to tease this early here, but we're planning on doing some shows live on location from certain games, one down in Tampa when I go down and visit you, one when you come up this way, go to Buffalo. And the Buffalo game is December 27th, which is going to suck. You better dress warm. But regardless, my buddy is a Jets fan, right? And I know I make fun of him all the time for it. But he's a Jets fan. And he told me about a time when him and his brother went to Buffalo. And just when you were saying the way you grew up, the mentality of visiting fans, Buffalo still got that, man. Dallas, Texas people are too nice. Texas people are too like, oh, okay, well, y'all have a good day now. Don't bother nobody, you know. But these Buffalo people, man, not only were they egging the Cowboy bus, Gatorade, full Gatorade bottles at our bus when we came in there last Sunday when I was in college, when Romo threw the 5 picks and then Bailey hit the – or maybe it was Cundiff. Either way, he hit the game winner.
I know exactly what it was. Nick Folk. He saved us. Nick Folk.
Oh, that's right. Nick Folk. I forgot. And Nick Folk. Well, Folk, you for reminding me that. But anyway, so we...
Current Jets kicker.
Yeah, well, again, Folk him. But the thing is with that is he was walking in the concourse in Buffalo, and he's got his Jets stuff on. And he's, oh, okay, hey, we're going to watch a game. This guy walks past him and goes, Jets fans. And they're like, yeah, man, Jets. Throws his... Now, this is like a 14-year-old kid at this point. We're going with his older brother to a game. Throws his beer on him. He says, get the hell out of here, you Jets fans, you suck. And the kid is drunk. Why did this guy just throw beer on me? All I was watching game. And Buffalo does that constantly. I mean, they are brutal, especially if you're Patriots, Jets, or Dolphins in there, which I think, knowing your personality and then knowing how passionate I can get about this team, I think that might be kind of fun going to Buffalo with Cowboy stuff on. As long as I don't damage any of the equipment, I'll be fine. But that kind of reminded me when you were saying that about that story, because, you know, too many teams in the league are allowing – are all about the checkbooks, and they're allowing other teams' fans to come in. Now, as you pretty good about it, but that game, obviously, Houston is so close to them. You know, that's almost like that's almost like saying Syracuse-Buffalo, you know, that distance. It's not that far. But
I guess my biggest thing, though, is like I said, it's just one of those, you know, do you want to throw a beer at anybody? No, I don't like that, because then it's like put it this way, if anybody even thought of doing anything and I had my daughter with me, I'd be going to jail and I'd be finding that person and we'd be handling it. So you gotta be careful, because I'm not saying, you know, you want to heckle a family if they're just trying to, you know, do a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You know, I would like to one day bring my wife and my daughter to a Cowboys game at Cowboys Stadium, and I'm not going to sit there and find a guy wearing an Eagles jersey and just lay into him. And, you know, that to me is a little level of, immaturity, like that story that you said. You know, you guys were a lot younger, so it's on, you know, or the guys that you knew were a lot younger, so you can understand it. And, you know, we were all kids and stupid at one point. But, you know, you got to root for your team, and yeah, you know, Eagles suck, and you know, your best quarterback was Donovan McNabb, and you know, you're never going to be relevant again. Stuff like that's fair game, but if swearing starts and, you know, throwing food and liquid starts, I'm not down with that, because, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, approaching our 30s, that, you know, there's a level of maturity that happens eventually. But, you know, the thing that I think is funny, you know, to match your story. You know, I live down here in Florida, and, you know, Miami Marlins and Tampa Bay Rays and, you know, Orlando Magic. There aren't a lot of quality teams out here that are doing well. Currently, the Rays are leading the division, I believe, in baseball. And, you know, I follow the Rays on a semi-casual basis, because baseball is not exactly my forte. But I went to a Rays game, and obviously you and I were, you know, we're New England born, and just because we don't root for the Red Sox and the Patriots doesn't mean that we weren't instilled with that New England mentality of you die for your team and
yeah,
cheer and
and you loud and all that. That is not like that down here in Florida. I got kicked out of the game in the sixth inning because I was literally laying into the opposing pitchers so bad, and I had multiple people come over that were in security being like, you can't say suck. You can't say, you know, any swears. You can't do any of that. So I understand the no swears thing, because then that goes into what I was saying. If there's a family nearby with a little kid, they don't want to listen to a guy being like, F you, this, that, the other. But so I'm
just
like, okay,
cake.
Tell
bulk
me again. I go, tell me, what can I say? Tell me right now what's open. They go, you can say you're a bad pitcher. I go, okay, so I'm allowed to say you're a bad pitcher. I go, okay. So I call the guy's name, and I'm like, hey, you're a bad pitcher. And I'm just going loud, loud, loud. And people thought that was more funny because that couldn't be more of a powder puff way to get into somebody's head, because there's no insult, really. I'm just saying you're a bad pitcher, and everybody knows that it's ridiculous. So, yeah, and literally – that guy looked to his pitching coach. The pitching coach looked to one of the security guys, who was a Rays guy, by the way. And then that security guy came over to me and kicked me out of the game. So I'm wearing Rays stuff, and my own, you know, Rays staff decides to kick the home fan out for being too loud, because everybody else is like 90, because Florida's the where you go to die, and there's no passion. And the stadium was literally 75% empty. So this is my point.
Well,
maybe the bigger market teams, the Floridas, the Texases, the Californias, the New Yorks, maybe you, but no, not really, because Yankees fans are passionate, man. So maybe those
there's
bigger
a
market
for that,
teams,
though.
Right? Maybe those bigger market
there's a reason
teams
why
don't
empty.
Mind. Right, they don't mind winning. As not winning as much, because they're used to winning all the time, so they're not as passionate about every game. You know, do I think that once the playoffs start, the Rays Stadium will be sold out? It probably will, because then the games will actually mean a lot more than, you know, one game early on out of a 162-game season. So, I mean, but that's the funny story to go along with yours is, I mean, I'm just out there heckling like a New Englander, you know, trying to say you suck and get in the dude's head. And I literally, the pitcher acknowledged me and was literally making the, like, you know, when you make your hand talk like a puppet, and he's doing that over his shoulder to me when he's on the bench because he could hear me. And I'm just saying his name over and over. I think his name was Keela, and he plays for, Texas, the Texas Rangers. Look him up.
Okay.
And
sure,
the guy.
Sure.
The worst part is I get home, and when I get home, I turn the TV on, and I see who picked up the save. It's freaking Keela. He went into the game. He was a mid-relief pitcher. He wasn't the starting pitcher. He went in, and he went in mid-relief, and he saved the game. But I was fully convinced that when I was, like, laying into the dude and screaming and getting the crowd hyped, that the team rallied around me, because as I'm yelling, we're getting runs in, and I'm screaming, and I'm going, and I'm going. And then it seems like the second I left the stadium, the offense packed up and we're all done, because we didn't score another run after that. But, man, I just don't know. I think the home field advantage for AT&T Stadium and the Cowboys is minimal, because, like I said, we don't have those passionate, you know, never won in 50 years, you know, type people. Like, you know, look at Cleveland in the NBA Finals this year. They sold out, and they were the last I've ever
heard
of.
Oh, it was a madhouse.
Yeah, they were nuts, and you would have never expected that out of Miami when LeBron was there with Dwayne. These people didn't show up until third quarter, because they're like, the game's boring. You know, they showed up at halftime, and they're like, all right, are we up or are we down? And then they start, you know, yelling, and they're there because they want to see the trophy. You know, these guys, they suck. So it's like, you look at a team like the Cavs that were like, you know, thirsty, 50-year drought. Go to the Dog Pound, the Raiders, you know, go to Cleveland in the Dog Pound, or the Raiders, you see the dudes with all the shoulder pads. They're there, and they're loud, and they're ready to go.
They all look like,
you know,
they all
like,
look like they
Buffalo.
The pan kiss.
Yeah, it's funny, because it's like these teams, these towns, it's almost like it's an inheritance. You grow up, and if you even think of liking another team outside of the team that your father and your grandfather liked, they kicked you out of the house and didn't let you back in until you liked the team. So it's like these guys are passionate, and it's a family instilled fandom that gets passed on from generation to generation. And, man, I really wish we had some of that with the Cowboys. And I think we do, probably, but 10% at most.
I think we do.
I mean,
I think so.
Yeah, I just think it's minimal.
No, it's got to be more than that.
I don't know, man, because I'm telling you what, if it was
more
than that, we definitely
If it was more than that, there wouldn't be a whole stadium full of Houston Texans fans so loud that Romo had to go to a silent count.
But that was one game. That was one game. I mean,
hey, no. If you went and revisited games last year, before he said that and after, especially after he said that, because I paid attention to it, many home games that had very good teams show up, there were a lot of fans in the Cowboys Stadium that were not wearing blue and silver and white. I'll tell you that right now, because they'll let anybody into that place because they want money. Pay attention this year, Chris. Look for it this year. Oh, the kid got booted again. I don't know. He's going to get his stuff together here. I don't know what's wrong with him. It's like every episode, it's something new. He disappears or he forgets to take his mute button off or whatever. It's just, you know, I can only cover him for him for so long. And you would expect somebody who went to, you know, broadcasting school in Connecticut, you know, that he'd be able to do all this stuff. But I'm gonna try to message him and get him back in here until then, so we don't have to deal with what we dealt with last year, where we had to end the episode early. I'm gonna just message him and say, get your A double crooked letter back on here, and I'll stall, and then hopefully he'll join us soon. But so, like I said, AT&T Stadium, it doesn't seem like it's that, you know, great at, you know, home field ice. I just don't see it. You know, I see it in other sports. And I even see it in football, but it just, you know, it's just it's not what it used to be, you know. And whether that's a problem with us, you know, as a team, if we're not good enough to provide that type. You back, Chris?
And yeah, we're having some bad weather up here, so it just booted me out of the system. We do actually have a caller, and it looks like it's 516. Is this the same guy who joined us on Wednesday?
Yeah, I was here on Wednesday. How you doing, guys? This is Bill from Long Island.
How are you
doing, Bill?
Listen, I was just listening to the show. Just a couple things. I'll start with the latest stuff first. When you get into stadiums like the real big stadiums like AT&T and whatnot, you seem to get it's hard to fill 90,000 seats of one team. You kind of get more casual fans. You get more fans going for an event. And when you're looking at the Cowboys' record at home, hasn't been so good the last couple years. Let's be honest, not much, you know, besides being a Cowboy fan, if you are, you weren't really much expecting much of your team last year. I mean, you just saw another 8-8, you know, three straight years of 8-8. Those tickets in the stadium, the good ones, are like $700. The Texans were known to have a good team if they got anything out of quarterback. They have like a Super Bowl, quote, caliber defense. Maybe at the beginning of the season say, you know what, maybe I'll sell my tickets to the Texan game and make $700-$800 on the thing and stuff like that. But I really called about the QBR rating that you guys are referring to before with the Tony Romo bandwagon and whatnot.
Yeah,
and you know what, I'm a lot older than you guys.
I liked it, but...
Yeah, you know what? I'm not a fan. I'm a little bit old school. I'm older than you guys. When I need to see a good quarterback, I don't need a quarterback rating. I don't need a number. I don't look at yards. I think yards is the most overrated stat as a quarterback.
Guy.
Just ask Drew Brees. I mean, you know, his numbers were fantastic this year. He put up nearly 5,000 yards. But when you're down 3 touchdowns all the time and you're not running the ball, you get they play soft zone. You can become a stat monger that way. But, you know, your eyes kind of tell you who is a good quarterback and who's not a good quarterback. And, you know, QBR is a cute stat, and I can appreciate it to a point. But, you know, there are certain times, especially when a quarterback – first of all, the most important stat for a quarterback is wins and losses. And that's the reason why Tony Romo takes more heat than he deserves to. Being a Giant fan, I know he's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but he's very, very good. He's probably in the top seven or eight in the league, and I'd be very comfortable.
Let me ask you this real quick. The wins and the losses, I agree with you, but this is why I'm going to shred somebody on Wednesday for daring to say that Eli Manning is better than Peyton Manning. The wins and the losses.
You might shred him. I don't know if he'll show up, but you might shred him.
Well, regardless, I'm laying into the kid because that's just atrocious to say. How can you tell me wins and losses is the ultimate way to how can you tell me that wins and losses is the ultimate way to judge a quarterback when there's a 53-man roster and an entire team equally attributes to get a win? If your offensive line doesn't show up and you have Peyton Manning back there, it doesn't matter. You could have the best quarterback to ever play the game back there. If my O-line's not blocking, he's not getting the pass off. You see what I'm saying? It's kind of difficult to – I think you need a little
bit
of everything.
I 100% agree with you, but he's like a – he gets more credit than he gets when he wins. I mean, Romo was 12-4 this year, and, you know, a lot of his games his number looked really good because he got the hand to number 29 30 times a game, and he rolled for 200 or so yards in a certain game. But the thing that really separates, like, the good quarterbacks and the great quarterbacks, you know, and you watch when the plays they make during crunch time and certain things like that, it is the plays that either they make or they don't make, and the stat's not going to tell you that. Going back to the Giants' last Super Bowl season, 2011, the Giants were down a few points fourth quarter late. Texas Stadium, AT&T Stadium, whatever you want to call it right now. There was a 3rd-and-5 play where Miles Austin was wide open over the middle, and Romo missed him by 5 yards. Terrible pass. They punt the ball. Eli brings them down the field and brings them to a victory. That win propels us to the wild card, you know, got a wild card spot. And that game got us. That game was a turnaround to our season, and that actually got us the last Super Bowl that we won. But you won't find that, you know, if you look at your stat books, you won't find that in any stat book. Now he's got to kind of know.
But that one right there is in the QBR, though, because what I was trying to tell everybody, if you ever have a minute, I want you to actually Google the QBR and what's factored into the equation. They literally factor in that play of Tony Romo's where he threw and missed, and it was an incomplete, and it changed the momentum of the game, and it factors in how much time's left of the game and giving the ball back to the opposing team to go and ice that game. That is part of the QBR. That's why I think it's such a good stat, is it's including all that situational stuff that you just brought up.
Yeah, it covers everything.
Yeah. I'll have to look more into it. I'll trust you a little bit, but you know what? Your eyes don't really deceive you, and you know,
I agree.
And Tony Romo, he led this year's quarterbacks. But to think that Aaron Rodgers wasn't the MVP watching football, I mean, come on. I mean, Aaron Rodgers.
I was just about
is
to
so
ask that.
Aaron Rodgers is so far away the best quarterback in the league. It's not even funny.
Can I ask you this? Do you think Aaron Rodgers did more last year than J.J. Watt as a total player?
Yeah.
Really? So
you saw what he did to the best
catching
defense in the world with one leg in that place.
That's true.
But a defensive guy coming in playing offense and then being
you talked before about when you use an argument, how many quarterback, you know, touchdowns that you throw. I don't want to hear J.J. Watt scores like 6 touchdowns on offense. That's a load of crap. They just put him in on the 2-yard line. He's 6'6". He's got a 5'10" guy. That's a meaningless stat. If you want to turn around and say, wow, he had 20 sacks, or he ran, returned 4 touchdowns off of turnovers or interceptions, fumbles, whatever, that's a meaningful stat.
That's just the icing. That's the icing on the cake, though, is that he had those stats that you just brought up, the pick sixes and the sacks, and then they're like, hey, guess what? We're going to even throw some offensive stuff at you.
No, that's crap.
You know?
That's crap. You could have thrown it to any other lineman, too.
Let me ask you this. With the Aaron Rodgers debate, if Aaron Rodgers had QB sneaks for 10 touchdowns as well as all of his offensive stats, you're telling me that you wouldn't bring that up in a debate at all?
I wouldn't have to. I mean, if you go through like the stats to define how good he is, stats really even don't even define how good he is. I think he was one of the things I like to go by is like interceptions and whatnot. He threw 5 interceptions all year, and he's 35. You know, he's 35 touchdowns to five interceptions. I'm sure there are 5-6 guys that have more touchdowns than him. I don't even think he didn't have much more than 4,000 yards either. Again, if you look at the baseline
actually had a run for the first time in a long time this year. So, yeah.
I mean, so again, like, I'm very critical on quarterback stats, and you know, I have a bunch of guys that I go to battle with on the good group online, and they swear by Drew Brees, but I think he's such an inflated numbers monster by where he plays and that his defense is so bad, and he's throwing it and slinging it all over the field.
Yeah, his coach loves putting the ball in his hand, and they will easily come out with an 80-20, you know, pass versus run scheme.
I mean, I'm sure one of you guys is a Cowboy fan. I know you saw the demolition the Cowboys put on the Saints, but if you look at the road numbers, I think Brees threw for nearly 400 yards, had 3 touchdowns. Yeah. You look at that, like he played a great game. He played a crappy game, and it was a lot of it was in the garbage time.
Yeah, that's why.
Well, my big
beat. Stats are 50-50. You need to throw the eye test in there. So. I respect your opinion.
Hey, well, my big beef, and we do only have about 5 minutes left here to go, but my big beef with the Saints and with Drew Brees is, like you mentioned, the numbers monger. The Saints are a team that will run the score up. The Saints will be up 28-3, and they're still trying to score a touchdown. You know, so that's why it felt so good to kind of rub it in the Saints' face this season, because they've been doing that for years, and that's kind of a douche move, in my opinion. But you know what? Thank you so much for giving us a shout.
Hey, real quick before we let him go, better Manning brother right now, Eli or Peyton?
I'm a Giant fan, and you know I'm not going to be biased. If you take health into consideration and everything right now, Eli is the better quarterback right now, and it'll be
Don't say toughness. Don't say toughness, because I'll clearly say Eli's the tougher brother. Overall,
agreed.
Better.
Eli is a tougher brother. Eli has better arm strength than. Better mobility right now. I think Eli's played like 160 games in a row and whatnot. He's got better weapons around him right now.
But
he's not 40 years old like his brother
position.
This is the only time in his life he can actually say he's better than his brother right now in 2015. If I was quarterback in a team, I can have Peyton or Eli. I take Eli.
All right.
Well, you know what, Dustin, you know what we need to do? We need to have him call him on Wednesday, because this is the segment that you wanted to do. We need to... you know, sort of go over this a little bit. We're way off topic with our home field advantage, but that's okay. That's okay. That's part of radio. About 3 minutes left to go here, and, you know, in the car business, if you sell a car and somebody comes back and buys another car from you, that means you're doing something right. We have the same caller on 2 different shows now. Obviously, we're doing something right. He enjoys it. So we thank you so much for giving us a shout, and if you want to talk a little bit more about this, it's going to be our first topic on Wednesday. And if you and Dustin want to go kind of toe-to-toe, Long Island versus Florida, that might be kind of fun, actually. But thanks again for calling us, man.
Long Island versus Florida, is that even a competition?
I'm not so sure. Although there are a lot of Long Islanders in Florida. So we'll put it that way.
Well, they don't call it God's waiting room for a reason.
That's very true.
All right, about 2 minutes left to go on the show. Thanks for calling. We're going to wrap this thing up, and hopefully we see you again on Wednesday for Wednesdays with Wayne.
Catch you guys later.
Take it easy.
So, again, a great call as usual. You know you're doing something right when you have repeat callers. Repeat callers that aren't prank calls anyway. We had that happen once, which was pretty cool. But that's it. So we've went over today. We've went over, are the Cowboys building a dynasty? Are they coming back, and are the pieces in place to put a dynasty team sort of together? We talked about Dez and his agent, and I still think Dez is a diva. Dustin still thinks that the Cowboy organization are the bad guys here. We're kind of off base on that, but hey, that's good. We talked about this little thing called QBR. We actually had a pretty good discussion with the caller about the QBR. I like it. Dustin likes it. Dustin likes it maybe a little bit better than me, but we both like it. And then we talked about home field advantage and why AT&T Stadium sucks for that reason. And this is Stars Align. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you may be listening, thank you for making us part of your afternoon on this Dallas Cowboy 90-Minute Monday with Dustin and Chris. We'll see you again on Wednesday for our Around the League segment. And that is Wednesdays with Wade. Again, Wednesdays with Wade, and then a same time, same place next week here on Monday. This is The Stars Align.
Can you say thanks for listening to The Stars Align? Can you say Dallas Cowboys? You're not giving me anything?
No.
Yeah!
next Populi song and our brand new intro and outro music. Again, thank you for listening to The Stars Align. See you again very soon. And by the way,
it was a catch.
That's what I was looking for. See y'all next week.